listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast, with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Maysoon Wazwaz.
I want to keep that buttery, smooth radio voice.
Who do you think has the best buttery radio voice?
Kai Ristall for Marketplace.
No way. He's kind of squeaky.
The tax code is nominally about government revenue. But as Marketplace's Adrian Hill explains to get us going, there's a whole lot more going on with the corporate rate than just a simple cost-benefit
thing. He has such a hunky voice, Maysoon. I don't think you're thinking of the right Kai Ristall.
Looks like a pregnant lady.
Anyhow, this episode is brought to you by the Compensation Foundation.
Today I had some artists ask me about compensation, and it was kind of like well before I knew what the project was. Like, I still don't know what the project is. And oftentimes I find myself saying, I don't exactly know what the compensation is going to be yet, but let me know what you usually charge. Because I kind of like, these aren't like, you're in a solo exhibition. There's work that we're taking from your studio. Like, this isn't like a... I feel like a lot of the work I do isn't so cut and dry in that way, and so I often kind of ask the artist to tell me what they think a fair price is or what they've gotten paid in the past for, like,
similar work. Ooh, shouldn't do that.
Why?
That's illegal now in some places when there's salary negotiations that businesses aren't allowed to ask how much were you paid in the past because it perpetuates unfair pay for women and minorities.
Huh. Well, what if you... But it also puts the impetus in the artist's hand to say they got paid whatever they want to get paid. Like, they don't... I'm not, like, fact-checking anything. Like, in that situation, you could say, we got paid $150, which maybe they got paid $250, but they felt like the value should have been higher.
Well, then why don't you just say, how much would you like to be paid?
I guess I ask both. But I always feel weird because I always feel like I should be more, like, decisive about how much to pay artists. But I also just feel like, you know... It's different. Each time is different.
Well, maybe it would be good to have, like, a pay scale where you kind of take in multiple factors, you know, of, like, right. Is it a new project? Is it a collaboration? Is it blah, right. blah, blah?
We do that. We definitely do that.
You know who's really thinking about this is the Compensation Foundation. They've got a thing out. The Bay Area Artists Report. It's an ongoing anonymous platform for visual artists to report and investigate compensation practices in their field. You can find the Bay Area Artists Report at compensationfoundation.org.
I saw a bunch of shows this week, Kate.
Tell me more.
Guess where I went. You'll be so excited.
The Wattis?
Yeah.
Tell me everything.
I went to the Wattis. I enjoyed a number of the works. We're in a car and I'm driving, so if I get distracted, it's because I'm trying not to kill us.
Okay.
Mostly. I found the project with all the missing E's. Well, not the missing E's. I found the project about the E's, like the tail dropped on the E's, where he basically has there's a typewriter in the art gallery where he's working. Sorry, I don't know, have his name right now.
Neil something Kennedy.
I think every day one of the gallery workers types a correspondence, like a real correspondence to either an artist or whatever they're working on. And then those typewritten correspondences get put on display, so you can kind of look through many pages of, like, the Wattis, like, all of the staff writing different correspondence pieces, and then all of that correspondence gets posted. That was me making a book. All of those papers then get made into, like, a book or a document that then, you know, goes into some archive or gets shown in another exhibition. So at the Wattis, you had the current correspondence with the Wattis staff, and then also, like, a couple other binders with letters from, like, the 70s from two different gallery spaces.
Well, why is it so the typewriter's fucked up and that's why that E piece is missing?
I think he actually removes the tail on the typewriter.
Why gallery. Just the E?
I don't know why just the E.
Okay, well, now here's the interview. Here in beautiful Bayview, San Francisco, speaking to the co-directors / writers, artists, bon vivants of Cloaca Projects, Charlie Leese and Marcella Faustini. Thank you so much for meeting with us here in your lovely, relatively new exhibition space.
Thank you.
Yes, thanks for inviting us.
Would you like to tell us about the show you have up right now that we're sitting in the middle of?
So right now we have a show of Olivia Mole's latest works. The pronunciation is kind of impossible.
Yes.
it's Rogantuju or something like that.
If you watch that voice.
Exactly. If you watch the PC, you'll come across the title. In speaking of impossible, it's really much about that idea of what's unutterable, unspeakable. Well, that's one of the ideas in the show, contained in the show. We have a series of sculptures and a video piece.
That word was actually lifted from a cartoon, a French cartoon, and it's like a, seems to be like an Elmer Fudd type character, and he's kind of cussing under his breath. And so I think it's actually a French word that means like name of God, and it's been sort of changed throughout, like, and when it's written in the cartoon fashion, it just looks like this sort of abstract word, but that's where it came from.
And there's a 20-plus minute video, including, it seems narrative.
It is. It has a couple of layers as far as narratives. There's this whole thing going on with a beard.
About, we were reading in the thingy about beard fetish.
Yes, for sure. And then, like, so this was also all shot in Greece, and I think they are pretty close to this island where for centuries, only people with beards were allowed in the island where these monks lived. So, of course, no children or women. It has somewhat changed, still just for men, no women allowed. So there's that one layer of the narrative in there as well.
Olivia's interested as the talking about the beard as a prosthetic and sort of a device to create separations and divisions in people, mainly the genders and status. And so she's kind of challenging those hierarchies.
Yeah, it's not the only prosthetic that you see there. There are other apparatus that pops in the video.
Fake feet, giant big feet.
Exactly. And the weird toe shoe thing. Yeah.
We also read in the description about some sheep sex between sheep. We didn't get to that part in our viewing of the video.
It's at the very end.
Are there real? Will you warn me? Because I have my back to the video right now when the sheep are doing it. Please let me know. So anyhow, how long has the space been open?
July. We started in July this year. Oh, the first show was with Porpentine Cherry Heartscape. And that was pretty awesome to do. And so this is our second show. So it's pretty new.
I have to say it's extremely professionally installed.
This pad that we're on, this concrete slab, was this existing space that was already here. And Hunt Projects has been here for 5.5 years. And this space, people would sand out here, paint, and use it in different ways. But it also sort of collected old projects and just became sort of a dumping zone. And when I renewed the lease for the next 5 years, I decided wanted to pursue this, and so we cleared off this existing slab and got a shed company to put up a really rough kind of exterior shell that's made of sheet metal, and then we outfitted the inside with the electricity and the walls and all that. It really gives us a lot of flexibility for exhibitions that are experimental, and we can do a lot with the space by utilizing what we already had in the lease rather than taking on a new lease at a space. So it just cost us the money to build the space and to do all that, but we didn't take on new rent. So that's really helpful in a place like San Francisco.
What is your, I guess, vision for this space? Or, I mean, so far I saw Porpentine's work and now this work, and it's a lot of media, and I'm wondering, is that like sort of the primary focus of your curatorial vision?
Like digital media?
Media. Yeah. I mean, I tend to like it a lot, so yeah. It happens. But we're definitely looking at also painters, and the next show is a sculptor. So there will be different things going on. It's just usually whenever I've put together a space programming, it just ends up happening because I'm drawn to that kind of work.
It's also, I mean, it's an incredible space for video. It's basically almost like a full black box in here, you know.
Will you talk a little bit about the significance of the name?
Yes. So cloaca, it's a word that I loved since I was a little girl, and I learned it in science class. And apparently not a lot of people know what it means. But the primary meaning is this orifice that amphibians, birds, some mammals have it, reptiles, where their excrement system and their reproductive system come together in this one hole. So everything goes in and out through there. And so this idea of really, you know, like, I think we're seeing a lot of changes in the gallery system in a way, right? And I was just interested in having a space that is pointing towards something different. And, you know, what better than to reproduce and expel, you know? So there's that. But also the Romans, their ancient sewer system was called the Cloaca Maxima, and they still stand to this day. I thought it was a very befitting, and Charlie was game for it. So
we also really like that it sort of has all the same letters as a lot of these other, you know, museum-type places that have these acronyms like LACMA, and that it could look like it could mean some other longer name or something like that. And then I've also was really drawn to it once I realized that Cloaca Maxima existed, and that was like, you know, a really extravagant early sewer system. And I like how I feel like project spaces and these sort of cultural places in cities are really like part of the infrastructure, and a lot of times with infrastructure in cities, it's stuff that's beneath the surface, like the sewers or the power lines above your head, and it's sort of these systems that are really essential but overlooked at times. And I feel like art and project spaces are sort of in that zone as well, and so I liked how it had that meaning.
You went to school on the East Coast,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then did you come back out here sort of right after you graduated? Or
I lived in Brooklyn for a little over a year. Yeah. Yeah. We moved to the Bay Area when I was 11. And so I'd spent part of middle school and high school out here and had family out here. It was fun to kind of come back and explore the Bay as a more serious artist and adult. So good experience.
There you go.
There.
Okay, we got the sheep. Oh, yeah. Oh. There they go. I've never seen that before. Are they really going to get into it?
I'm sure you could just YouTube a video of sheep.
They're a little demure. How long is the show up?
We're doing shows that last around 2 months, so this is going to be up until the weekend before Thanksgiving.
Okay, so listeners, you've got some time. We'll have links down in the underworld.
Will you be doing any sort of adjacent programming for your shows, or is that...
At this point, not yet. So for December and January, we had a bit of a shift on the schedule. So we don't have shows at the gallery. Mm-hmm. So it's likely they will be doing some event-based programming around there. And then also in January, there are the fairs. So we are,
You're doing some art fairs?
No.
Okay, right on.
I'm like, wait, really? I thought you were saying that. I was like, oh.
We're going to do some events or performances or maybe some screening. We're still working all that out, but some events around it.
Yeah, while the fair is going on.
Do you want to talk about some of your past curatorial projects?
The first curatorial thing that I did, I was still in graduate school, and I ran a sound series for 3 years, even after I was out of grad school at CCA at the gallery space there. And then I was artistic director of this gallery, Noma Gallery, that was run for 2.5 years. I did that. And then I worked with Stephen Wolf for the last year and a half of the gallery before he closed.
How was it working for Stephen Wolf? Did a lot of weirdos come in to the gallery?
Well, yes, but we love weirdos. You know, like Stephen and I really intersect that way. I mean, he definitely left a hole in the programming in the city because nobody really quite does that. So, and he was really good at bringing the San Francisco underground and like find these different connections and holes and things, you know. But yeah, I loved it. It was great.
If you have any gripes or shit talk about the Bay Area, about the Bay Area art scene.
You're opening a can of worms.
I'm like, really? Is that 1 more second?
Yes.
Well, I'll start. I think that we're at a real trying time right now with a lot going on. There's a lot of excellent things happening with, you know, Minnesota Street Project. MoMA's back open. You know, Asian Art Museum is going to do a big addition. There's just so much happening. We really need bigger institutions to do more with the rich Bay Area community. You have New York and LA, and it's okay to be New York centric.
Not as in wealthy, but right.
I mean, rich in terms of quality and ambition and great work and people that are really ready to like just they're real working artists. And you have New York and LA that can be like New York centric and LA centric, but why can't we be Bay Area centric? At least a little bit more than just the Bay Area Now or Sika, they're just not doing enough. So I know the SF MoMA has its Fort Mason outpost, but I would say if there's any institution people out there, create more opportunities and shows for the Bay Area community.
A few days ago, I posted on my Facebook because there's this band, Wolfies, that was just in town for from last Wednesday into Sunday, and they were doing a residency format where they got... they played shows with all local, different local bands, right? And I mean, Wolfies is pretty established and has a following. So that can do a lot for some of these bands. And then you never know, like, they might really like someone, and then that can result in a tour or something like that, right? And then I posted on Facebook if, because I couldn't think of anybody doing something on that same model, or like say you bring a famous artist and like then you maybe do something more satellite around the artist with like local people, partnering. I mean, I don't know, you could partner with, it doesn't have to be in the institution, it could be outside of it, right? Like if I understand, I have a lot of friends that work in institutions, and I'm constantly aware of how bureaucratic and prohibiting things are, and everything is so complicated, and there are people involved in the process, they're very short-sighted. There are some amazing people working in these institutions, but there are some people that, I don't know. How can we look at different models, maybe, and like people are saying, it's much easier to do this with music, but I'm not convinced. Maybe you could even really mix, like you could bring a big music person, that, because, and that's the other discussion I got into, like art is not just visual art, like there's so many, like the separation that exists in the art world, I find it very problematic, also because I didn't grow up here, and where I grew up in Brazil, when you say someone is an artist, it might mean that they are a musician or a writer, a dancer, it's a myriad of things. So, but not so much here, there's very much a division. But I do think that could be a model of thinking. I think some galleries tried that a little bit, like when they do group shows or like they pair a bigger artist to a small, someone local, yeah. But it's not to the same effect when it's done. I think it can be a bit more ambitious. So institutions are usually the ones that can afford to bring someone bigger, like I have some successful friends, but like we're running on no budget, and I feel weird to like ask them, someone that is already at a certain position, but this was actually the Wolfies thing. It was their own for idea. Like they were working with James Decker, who's been putting these great experimental shows here. And they had done something like that a few years back here in the Bay Area, and they wanted to come back to this sort of way of working where it's more like they come in and work locally. They don't just come through town, play a show, and that's that,
You should having local artists open for big artists reminds me of how Alicia McCarthy would have like younger artists. Like when she'd have a solo show, she'd invite a younger artist to also be in the show. When you go to a concert, what do you do with your hands?
It depends on the concert. If I'm dancing or if it's, I go to a lot of noise music, so there's a lot of this, like crossing your arms and just feeling the music. But last night I went to see Jalen and I danced, so my arms were accompanying my feet, depending on the move.
Yeah. I find that I don't go to a lot of live music because I get so self-conscious about my hands and my movements.
Well it's just you just have to try, Kate.
Just have a blindfold on. See what happens.
I'm always afraid I'm going to accidentally touch everyone's genitals through their butts.
That could be fun. Yeah.
Very specific.
Very specific. Just Jersey fist pump.
Just honk the horn all night.
Okay. Marshall, I had read that you studied theater arts. I'm just so curious about that. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, my undergrad degree is in theater directing and stage management. So I grew up going to a lot of theater, had an actor uncle that was really influential on me. I studied theater in high school, but there's like a weird culture around theater in high school here that is not the same in Brazil. So I'm not like the theater folk. I don't break in song all the time. But I can.
So
the people I was in undergrad with, they did that a lot. There was an emphasis on musical theater, right? Because it's the majority of theater that Americans are familiar with. So yeah, but it was a great, it was at University of South Florida, and I had some amazing teachers that really nurtured my strange tastes in theater and were very supportive. But I also got interested in theater that was multimedia, where you're using sound and video and mise-en-scene and everything together to create an environment.
Did you come straight to Florida from Brazil?
Yes, I moved from Brazil to Florida, and I was in Florida for 8 years. I did undergrad there and then moved to California.
Was that weird?
Florida. Well, yes, Florida is weird. But, you know, that was the America I knew first. And so it gives you a really, like, when people have these delusions here in the Bay Area of what America is, I'm like, you know, it's like that. That's what's out there.
Go spend some time in Florida. Yeah. Anyhow, we always like to ask our guests at the end of an interview if there is anything else you would like listeners to know.
I'm going to tell you how to get here. Yeah. So you can take the 3rd Street rail from downtown anywhere and get off at 3rd and Evans. And then we're on Davidson Ave, which is right one north of Evans, and about halfway down the street on the right.
So there's a, like a 5-minute walk?
Yes, less than five minutes from the stop. And we have an orange and blue sign that says Hunt Projects.
Yeah, and you can, if you cannot make on Saturday when we have the hours, 12 to 5, just email us or text us. There's all the information is on Instagram, on our Instagram page and Facebook page, and we can figure out a time that works for you during the week, and you can do it by appointment. But do come see the show. It's a great show. Definitely worth taking the half hour and sitting in here and watching the whole thing.
Totally. It's really worth the trip. You get a lot of content, a lot of visual stimulation.
And we're only 10 blocks from Minnesota Street Project, so.
You can make a day of it, yeah.
And then also in the neighborhood, Guerrero Galleries on the same city block, right around the corner. So there's a lot of art stuff happening right out here now.
Where's the best place to eat around here?
You can get a coffee from Flora Grub. Oh, La Laguna is a really good taqueria right by us. Yeah, right on 3rd. You could stop there before you come over. It's right off the 3rd and Evans stop as well.
Boom. Tacos, coffee, art. We've ready got it all.
Sounds good.
Well, thank you both so much for meeting with us today and sharing this great show with us.
Of course.
And
thank you.
Yes, thank you as for always... Congratulations. Okay, we'll be back with more reporting from the Wattis and beyond next week here at your old friend, this show. But until then, from the bridge
to the other bridge
to the island in between, this has been
Congratulations, I Am Dream.